I probably should start the episode. Maybe these guys aren't ready yet. Oh, fuck it, I'll just do it anyway.
And we're live!
Hello, and welcome back to an internal whispering episode of the First Time Watchers Podcast.
Are you sure about this?
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
I'm Romano Da Silva.
What name should I give?
Walter Vinci.
What we'd like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And if you'd like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com, and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback, guys,
we
have constant feedback. Twitter is a great repository for feedback.
Bring it on.
We'd like to point out a conversation we had with William Dale on Twitter regarding spoilers. It all started when someone else had tweeted a link that included spoilers to Man of Steel.
Okay.
And that led me to tweet out a comment, still can't understand why anyone would want to know spoilers to a film ahead of time. William Dale responded, because I hate the suspense and worry. I can enjoy it more if I know what's coming. I responded, but why? The anticipation and manipulation is what movies are all about. You're doing a disservice to the filmmakers. He responded, I can and have watched movies dozens of times and still be as upset, sad, angry, happy as the first time. Example, I just had to know if the dog died in I Am Legend. Once I knew, then I knew what to expect, but not all the details. So, guys, what is your opinion of spoilers?
I don't like spoilers.
Yeah.
I like being surprised. I don't like knowing my birthday present is before I get it. I may ask about it, but it's all like basically kind of like tongue-in-cheek. Like, oh, what'd you get me? Mm-hmm. Just to,
right.
You know, to build it up. I don't want to know what I'm getting. If there's something shocking in the movie, I want to be shocked. A classic example is when I found out a major spoiler in the series Neon Genesis Evangelion, and I almost didn't want to finish watching the rest of the series. But a particular character who becomes really well-liked, Armando knows exactly what I'm talking about,
yep.
And, I mean, this is going back, I'm not going to spoil it just in case anybody is actually watching the series or whatever, but somebody had posted on a message board I was on that something happens,
yep.
And I went, I almost don't want to watch it now. I like that surprise. I like having that shock value. Like, oh my god, I didn't see that. Or, wow, that's so cool. They put that in the movie. Like, I don't want to know that ahead of time. I want to be sitting in the theater. I want to have the movie magic happen when that hits me.
Hermana?
I try to know as little as possible going into a movie. I think it's the whole, you know, reason for going to a movie for me is, like, I want to be, like Wally said, I want to be surprised, I want to be shocked, I want to genuinely be, I think it's the whole purpose of making the movie is, like, you set out to surprise people, get a reaction or an emotion out of them, and knowing it ahead of time, like, you just totally erase that, and, like, what's the purpose then?
Yeah, I agree.
You've cheated yourself of an experience, knowing the spoilers.
Yeah, and I guess there are some people, like William Dale, who are able to separate those two things and still, but to me, you're still cheating yourself. I don't know.
Not quite like cheating on a test, like, but I get that feeling, like, if I already know how something ends, like, I feel like I'm cheating somehow, like, I don't have to pay attention as much because I know where this is going. I don't have to really pay attention to dialogue or specific plot elements because I'm like, well, I know I don't really have to care about that character because I know that he dies in this movie. Yeah. So why even focus on him?
Whenever I hear the word spoiler, whenever I think of the idea of spoiling something, I always go to the one of the ultimate movies in the Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
You know, and I just can't imagine going into that movie knowing what the ending is.
Yeah.
Because
well, there's people who BS that all the time. I run into people all the time like, oh, I saw that coming a mile away.
I'm like,
I don't buy that for a second because you had the same reaction to that and went, oh, what?
Yeah.
And also, you look at the movie completely different if you know, like, the outcome. I mean, you're looking at something completely different if you already know
what
happens.
There's a difference between going into it fresh, finding the spoiler, finding the surprise, and then going back and revisiting it and looking for something different.
Like
you
the
know?
Clues.
Clues or anything like that. Hidden stuff. And that's a completely different experience. And I just can't see... And people who recklessly tweet or display spoilers, it's just... I don't know, beyond reproach, I think.
It's kind of a douchey thing to do, to be like... Like, you'll see this all the time, especially with, like, something like The Walking Dead. you know, where people will just be like, I can't believe this happened, all over Facebook, all over Twitter. I'm like, wow, thanks for considering those who may not have seen it or have DVR'd it.
Well, that's the thing with Twitter. People live tweeting shows now, as they're going on.
And like, you don't have to give away the, you know, you don't have to give away the details to be able to talk about it. We could do the whole show here without a single spoiler if we wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, there's you don't have to put those kind of details in a report or in a tweet or a Facebook post.
Yeah.
It's not necessary. I mean, it really does spoil it for everybody else. Like, an example that you give was the 600. My favorite is The Usual Suspects.
Sure, yeah.
You go into if you know the ending of that movie, then why even bother watching it?
Exactly. All right. In this episode, we'll be talking about the 1980 Chuck Norris film, The Octagon. But before we get into that, it's time for Yay or Nay. This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own, and I am pointing at you, Hermano, so I will allow you to go first.
Okay, so I only watched two things. The first one, I was feeling nostalgic because this past week I finally was able to accomplish one of my life goals.
Which was?
Sit in a DeLorean.
Really?
Yes. Truly, it was one of my life goals. I love that car in the movie, so I was feeling nostalgic after, you know, I took some pictures in a DeLorean. I was able to sit in one, and I went back and I watched Back to the Future.
Nice. Right on.
And it's still amazing. Nothing has changed. It's still awesome. I still love this movie to death. I'm not going to talk a ton about it because everyone's seen this movie. But just, I don't know, like, it's one of those movies that's endlessly watchable for me. Like, anytime it's on TV, I'll watch it. I go out of my way to watch it. It wasn't on Netflix or any of the other instant services, so I actually went on to Comcast and ordered it because they didn't have it as well. And I don't own it, surprisingly, but...
What?
I know. I was looking... As soon as I sat in the DeLorean, I swear to God, like... Things came rushing to my mind, like, how do I not own this movie?
Yeah, where did you find this DeLorean?
I was out looking for a car for my lady, and...
Is someone selling this DeLorean?
Someone is selling this DeLorean.
Yeah, wait till you hear how much money.
How much do they want for this DeLorean?
They want 25 grand.
That's a lot of money for a DeLorean.
It is.
hard to find now.
It's a kind of a mishmash. I mean, the outside of it is perfect. The inside is good. But I think mechanically, it's got a mishmash of parts. Like, it's got Volvo parts on it and stuff like that. So,
you know, interesting piece of trivia I recently read is Rat, the bum, who you see, you know, towards the end when he comes back. And you know the movie theater that he crashes into at the end in 1985?
Yeah.
And the marquee has, like, a porn title on it?
Yeah, yeah.
Rat, that actor, the bum, was, like, an extra or something like that in that porn that was displayed.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
That is hilarious.
Yeah. But Back to the Future, of course it's EA. And finally, I watched the movie that I believe was in WALL-E's top 10 that I didn't get a chance to see last year. I watched... End of Watch.
Now, did you watch it because you were interested in it, or because WALL-E had put it in his top 10? Did you put it in your top 10?
It just missed my top 10.
Oh, okay.
I could have.
It was in my top half of the year.
Yeah.
We did our half year review. It was in my top 6 or my top 5 for that part. And a bunch of other good movies came out, and it just kind of kept getting pushed back. I still love that movie though.
Yeah, it's directed by David Ayer, stars Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña. It's shot somewhat documentary style and then conventionally. I'm glad that the documentary stuff didn't overtake the movie because I felt at times it was a little jarring and they just used it kind of whenever they felt like it, like it wasn't consistent. And basically it's Jake Gyllenhaal, the one I guess he's taken like an elective at a school that he's going to, who wants to become like a lawyer or something. And he took a film class, so he's carrying this camera around and shooting some footage while him and his partner patrol the streets of L.A. I thought the movie was pretty good, especially Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña. I thought they were believable as like partners that had been together for a while, and you know, you could believe that they were friends in real life and stuff like that. The part where I think the film goes off the rails a little bit is the gangsters in the movie. I thought that was super over the top, like, especially the one female.
Yeah,
I don't remember the one that's driving them around.
I know what you're talking about.
Holy crap, man. Like, it's almost comedic. It's almost comedy because she's really, really trying to push home the fact that they're badass.
And she's hardcore.
And we're wicked hardcore. And, like, you know, I'm down for whatever and blah, blah, blah. And it was way over the top. But other than that, I thought the movie was pretty good. It's got some pretty powerful moments. Especially this one in the middle of the movie where they take a call and they go to this house where this woman supposedly has lost her kids.
Yep.
That scene was pretty messed up. Like, I was like, wow, all right. So overall, the movie's pretty good. The only thing I didn't like is they kind of put a button on the end. You remember what I'm talking about?
Yep.
I really felt that was, like, unnecessary. I feel like it should have ended about 5 minutes earlier.
Yep.
Other than that, I would definitely recommend the movie. It's not bad. Yeah, just give it a yay.
All right, I'll go next. I saw the winner of Best Documentary at the Oscars for last year, and that's Searching for Sugar Man. Now, this is the only documentary of the nominees that I saw of last year, and at an hour and 26 minutes, it's way too long.
Really?
For people that don't know, it's about two South Africans who set out to discover what happened to their unlikely musical hero, the mysterious 1970s rock and roller Rodriguez. The music in this is really cool because it's all Rodriguez's songs, and they're really, really nice. I mean, it definitely sounds like something I would want to own. But the thing with the documentary is that it's at times infuriating, and at times really compelling. When it's at its most compelling is when it's telling how his albums, or this one particular album, became such a part of the culture in 1970s and 80s South Africa.
Yep.
And it goes in... Are you familiar with this movie?
I know the story behind it.
Oh, okay. So, at one point, it goes into, you know, telling you the history of the rise against apartheid in South Africa and how his albums, his music really spoke to the people. And that was the most interesting part. There are other interesting parts as to you know, who this guy is, who his family was, and what where he is compared to his popularity in South Africa. But other than that, there's time. The most frustrating parts of this documentary is when it just seems so self-aware that it's a documentary, that the people speaking to the camera seem like they're speaking from scripts. You know, like they already know what they're going to say. And the best documentaries are just the camera recording these natural reactions of people. That's why docs like Tabloid and Capturing the Freedmans and Dear Zachary are so great because they're either documenting situations as they happen, or they're just interviewing people without any
the
voice of the documentarian is not there, you mm-hmm. know, and that's what I got a lot of the times from this. And there's so much fluff in here. To me, this would have been a better, like, extended 60 minutes segment. There's just no reason for this to be a full feature length film. So I mean, ultimately, I have to give it a meh, and not a very hearty meh at all either. I mean, it's just I found it more frustrating than inspiring. And next and last, I'll talk about a movie that impresses me more the more I watch it. And it was in all of our top tens of 2011, and that's Drive. I just wanted to rewatch this, and
it's a good movie to rewatch.
Well, yeah. Every time I rewatch this, I am struck at how well constructed this fucking movie is, because if there should be classes that show this movie and say, this is how you construct a film, especially a minimalist film, because it is so perfectly constructed. I think at the time when we were doing our top 10 of 2011, And this was our very first top 10 list. I had ranked it at like number 6. I would definitely rank it higher now, you know, there's no question. But, and honestly, I think you guys might agree, it's probably one of the best films of the last 10 years.
Yep, I remember when we did the list, it was on my number 2.
Yeah, yeah. It's just an unbelievable film. It just perfect, perfect filmmaking when it comes to editing, when it comes to score. Cliff Martinez's score is fucking amazing. That is one of the few soundtracks that I keep going back to and listening to, especially if I... You know, honestly, it doesn't even matter what kind of mood I'm in. If I'm in a pissed off mood, I'll listen to it because there'll be parts of it that really calm me. If I'm in a mood where I just want to get myself pumped up, there's other parts that really, really just amp me up too because it reminds me of certain scenes in the movie. Just tremendous, tremendous filmmaking. I everything about this movie is near perfect. It's so well done. So obviously that's a yay for Drive. Walter.
All right, so we have, what, 2 yays for Hermano, 2 yays for Tim, and I'm going to split this one down the middle with a yay and a nay. I didn't get a chance to see very much in the way of movies this weekend. I was out and about enjoying nature and having a general good time of it. And so I was able to watch a couple episodes of a TV show that I absolutely adore, and it makes me weep for the History Channel, what it's become now. It used to be such a great channel, and I used to watch it, like, you could pretty much guarantee my TV was going to be on it at all times. They had all sorts of great shows, especially this one, Modern Marvels. For those who might not be familiar with it, because now it's on the premium channel H2. Thank you very much.
Comcast?
Or
whatever.
Yeah, the cable company is splitting out. They're putting
producers all the behind other History Channel?
Yeah, exactly. We'll take all the good shows. We'll just give you Pawn Stars, and we'll take all the good shows and move them to another network.
Well, they did give you The Bible, which you enjoyed.
Yes, that was excellent. But those are few and far between. I want to see my more historical, like, fact stuff. And Modern Marvels is one of those things that it can make things like mundane. Like, there's an episode based just on wood, but wooden products. How wood is shaped. literally like technology now, and it's awesome. Giant size can. The one that was probably my favorite of the bunch that I watched was the one about supersizing things. How you make a giant size hamburger for like the Guinness Book of World Records, like what goes into like the process of this, and it's pretty fascinating.
I've seen one of those episodes where they analyzed like large construction vehicles, like these huge massive vehicles,
like earth movers and stuff like that. Yeah. And there's also a really good one too on carbon, which is like you won't realize how practical this stuff actually is. This is a yay all the way. God, I miss the History Channel the way it used to be. Makes me weep. And then something that made me angry, and I just like sat there and went, dear God, this. I sat through this.
How many episodes did you see?
Well, God, thankfully one.
Oh yeah.
And I can I'm really, you know what, you guys can chew me out on Twitter or on the Facebook pages. You know what, this is not a good show. I don't understand why people like it. I guess I all right. You know what, I take that back. I'm guessing it appeals to a certain demographic.
Oh, certainly.
And I am certainly not that demographic.
No.
And I'm talking about Lena Dunham's Girls. Oh my God! What a painful show to watch. And so I went back and said, well, maybe I just saw a bad episode. I Googled some clips. And I have a question, and I think this is going to be a very valid question. Does Adam Driver own a shirt? Because almost every single clip that I've seen, his character is sitting around shirtless at some point, or just walking around shirtless. I'm like, do you own clothes? And it reminded me of Sex and the City, and maybe as insane as Sex and the City does, because I'm sitting there going,
honestly, there were times of Sex and the City that I actually enjoyed.
I never enjoyed a single bit of Sex and the City.
I never enjoyed Sex and the City. I was forced to watch that with an ex-girlfriend. I hated it.
And yeah, Sex and the City, I sat there and went, you know what, there's a reason why you guys should all be single, because you're just a bunch of on this one. And this makes me go, maybe not that harsh, because I guess it's supposed to be like in their 20s or like late 20s, or
they're a bunch of brooding hipsters that are depressed that, about their lives, they're annoying because they're
and apparently Lena Dunham wants you to like her so much she's gonna take her clothes off every single episode or every chance she gets. She's like, naked, yes. And it's funny because I was watching this with one of our listeners, and there's a scene where one of the characters is about to have sex with another character. who's supposedly gay. And she takes her top up and then lies down and immediately crosses her arms in front of her chest. And she turns to me and says, "Well, we know someone who's, you know, some, we know someone, we know, at least we know now who's, doesn't have nudity in their contract."
Yeah.
And then even after, like, the whole act is done, when this character gets up, she, her arms are still crossed. So I'm like, well, all right, that's probably not in your contract, and that's fine.
It's totally just distracting for the...
These characters are not likable. Yeah. I don't know how people, like, can get and watch a show and enjoy it.
Obviously, it's reached a certain audience that really likes it, you know, and maybe it's the same... age bracket that they're portraying in the show, you know.
I'm guessing, but this is a nay, a nay, and in the words of Dave Chappelle, I wish I had two hands. I just put two extra hands, so I give it four thumbs down.
I've seen a few episodes of this, and I'd say I kind of liked two of them, and one of them I was just like, ooh, if the rest of the show was like this, I definitely wouldn't be into it. But I didn't think it was as bad as you're saying, but. It's definitely not exactly geared towards... I wouldn't even say it's geared towards guys. I think it's definitely like a Sex and the City for like a younger generation.
God, this would have made me... I said that I wish I had a hammer and nails. I would just pound nails into my ass.
However, I do give credit for Lena Dunham finding a niche audience. And she is a talented person. If this helps her create other... things, other maybe movies, then God bless her.
Well, I say this, I don't want to see Tiny Furniture, like, ever. Just after this, seeing what I've seen of girls, I'm like, I don't care to ever see this movie.
What if I told you that entire movie was shot on a Canon 7D, very similar to our camera?
That's impressive.
There you go, you can check it out and see what kind of movie you can possibly make.
That's not even close to being
I'm
enough.
I'm just trying to get you to watch it.
It's not going to happen. So that's a nay on girls.
All right, let's get right into The Octagon. The plot. I'll try not to laugh while I read this.
Go ahead.
A martial artist must defeat a plan by ninjas to create a worldwide training camp for terrorists. The director, Eric Carson. The actors, Chuck Norris, Karen Carlson, and Lee Van Cleef. Walter.
Yo.
Give me a Chuck Norris fact.
Kind of Chuck Norris. Let's see. Chuck Norris. You know, when Chuck Norris came to the Virgin Islands, they were still the Virgin Islands. When he left, they were just called the Islands.
Very nice. And why don't you get into what you thought about the film?
Well, it's indicative of an early 80s action movie, as in not a heck of a lot of action, but I guess at the time it was considered, you know, kind of groundbreaking. It's one of the first ninja movies ever in the United States that brings up, like, the whole ninja, because the Shokasugi movies followed shortly afterwards. So that's the guy most people associate with ninja movies. So this was kind of like the introduction, like, the American audiences to, like, the idea of the ninja.
The show Survivor had the original premise of putting people on the island with Chuck Norris. There were no survivors, and nobody is brave enough to go. Anything else you want to add about the movie?
There was one time in the movie I felt cheated, but I thought it was going to be an awesome, epic 70s chase scene. Featuring the character AJ, I was like, oh yeah, it's on. This guy's running away, and there's all these palettes of stuff. And I hear the music. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna get to cars. We're gonna drive through boxes, and it's gonna be like, no. Someone's getting strangled.
Chuck Norris was only angry choice, and those times are known as World War I and World War II. Romano?
I thought this movie was pretty hilarious. I think I threw up the recommendation for this movie. pretty much because I knew Wally was gonna be really mad that we had to watch Holy Motors. So I'm like, let me lighten up,
lighten the load a little bit.
Let me lighten the mood a little bit and watch a classic from the 80s that I'd never seen. None of us have ever seen this, right?
No.
This movie had me laughing like 5 minutes in. As soon as he did his first internal dialogue,
oh my God,
with that echo effect.
What was that?
Hilarious.
What was that?
That was amazing. Come on, when he walks into the house with that woman, he's like...
Who he failed to save!
We're not alone. I know someone is here.
You know what? That scene confused me when I saw that.
Yeah.
That scene...
Because I actually thought that when he's fighting the ninjas in the house, and he turns the lights on, and everyone's, like, dead...
Yeah.
I thought the ninjas, like, had did some sort of weird ninja magic. I was like, holy crap, that's awesome!
You thought those dead people were the ninjas?
I thought those were the ninjas!
They lost their clothes? No, but that scene is hilarious to me for another reason, because the scene opens up with him and his friend at, like, a ballet recital. And Chuck Norris picks up a woman and takes her back to her house after some dinner. And ninjas attack out of nowhere. And she, spoiler, ends up getting killed.
No, wait. We'll wait for the... Well, yeah, all right. This is the beginning of the movie, so this can't really... It's you can't really spoil the first 10 minutes of a movie.
It's not integral to the plot. She dies, and I love how there was no emotion there. He literally picks up a phone and is like...
Hello, police.
The very next scene, his friend is consoling him. He's like, don't worry about it. You only knew her for a couple hours. And I was like, what the fuck? It's a human being just died. Like, he has no emotion. He has
not just
one...
that. You just fought for your life against ninjas.
Yeah, and he has no emotion. He has one look on his face throughout this entire movie. He is awful in this movie.
Don't let him hear you say that.
Well, you know that Chuck Norris doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the world away from him.
Ooh.
Anyway, like, the rest of the movie was hilarious. His internal dialogue bits, every time they came up, I was like... Wow, these dudes really had no other way to get Chuck Norris to convey, like, emotion, because everything is just narrated for him. Like, it's weird.
Chuck Norris's house has no corners. It's a roundhouse.
Oh. See where this is going real quick.
As far as the action, I agree with Wally. It's sparse. The other thing I noticed is Chuck Norris looks incredibly old in this movie.
Well, no, wait a minute here. Wait a minute. I think he... Based on what he looks like today, the guy hasn't aged a second.
I don't agree. I think he looks so freaking old in here, which is a testament to the makeup person in Expendables 2, which came out last year, because he looks awesome in that movie. And in this movie, he looked like he had a lot of pop marks in his
this
face.
This is before the adventure of the total gym, sir.
I guess. He just looked...
Maybe you noticed that because he had no beard, which
no
is
beard,
really weird.
Which is, it's
just the full push-through mustache.
He just had the porno stash. And speaking of porno, the acting in this movie is porno level acting, because it was horrible. And if I was a woman, I would not be in this movie, because it's practically a horror movie for women, because every woman dies pretty much.
This is true.
I'm like, dude, you do not want to be a woman in this movie, because one,
don't date Chuck Norris.
Men will not give a shit about you, and two, you're most likely gonna die.
Wait a minute, worldwide plot? When did they ever convey this is a worldwide plot?
Because ninjas are proliferating the world. Slowly but surely.
Okay.
And 20 then people at a time.
It's like the bottom of the... But the thing is, we're watching the bottom of the barrel class for, like, ninjadom. Like, over the course of this movie. And, like, even the instructor is, like, says it to the main bad guy. He's like, if we don't graduate this class, we're not going to have anybody to graduate.
Oh, you're using the classifieds to recruit mercenaries.
He's like, do you want to be a mercenary? Call me. Circle this.
That was amazing. Think of the police work that it took for him to find that. He just opens up his newspaper and it's like, hey, there's an ad for mercenary. These must be the guys.
He doesn't bother to change, like, his first, like, he just changes his, like, his last name. He's like, what's your name? He's like, Steve Colby. Is that your real name? Yes. Okay, I'll take that.
Does
is that your real name? Doesn't matter. No, I suppose it doesn't. Wait a minute.
It would be better if they named Chuck Norris and his bad guy.
Sakura.
No, Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes, because that's exactly what this was.
Pretty much.
The story of Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes. Seriously.
Well, no, see, because in Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes, you find out it was Zartan that set the boat that set up the two of them. There's no Zartan in this.
That we know of. Maybe there's the Octagon, too.
You know, there might be an Octagon, too. Oh, I have a funny feeling about that. I have a feeling it's not a Chuck Norris movie.
Now, You talked about the acting. What about the camera, the stock camera that they... It looked like the same cameras that they would have used on Chips. I mean, it looked like a TV movie.
Yeah.
The editing in this movie was atrocious. Like, literally, scenes would cut literally the second someone had just finished talking. Like, it was weird. And just the way they kept going back and forth between the ninja training camp and what Chuck Norris was doing, it was so jarring. Like, I'm like, I have no idea what's going on over there because you haven't learned yet. You haven't learned what are these guys being trained for. You have no idea.
None.
And then Chuck Norris just starts talking about ninjas and, like, there is another that can train ninjas. And I'm just like, what the
hell? Aren't they in, like, South America or something?
I have no
idea. Where the hell are they?
I don't know where they are. I thought they mentioned it in the movie. I'm trying to think of where they said it was.
It doesn't even matter because the movie doesn't even care because they're obviously not in Japan, like, or, you know, where I think a ninja would normally be. Like, it's just...
That's because ninjas are always where you least expect them.
And I'm like, what? They must be local because he picks up a local paper and is able to find them easily.
It's the local ninja chapter 123. It's where they're a union.
Chuck Norris once shot down a plane by pointing at it and saying, boom.
All right, like... The other thing that I found hilarious about this is the enforcer ninja, who apparently is
the
cat
big guy,
who's apparently a cat in disguise, because like the entire time he's fighting Chuck Norris, like later on in the movie, he gets close to him. He gets close to him this way.
I was expecting him to rip off his burka and reveal like a snake face or something.
Yeah. Nope, but I mean, apparently you throw a Chinese star at Chuck Norris, he'll get so mad he will roundhouse kick you into a ball of fire.
Did you guys notice when that guy emerged from the fire, he was about 300 pounds heavier?
He was like, ah!
He obviously had a gigantic burn suit on, and I was like, oh, I miss the 80s.
Yeah, I know. Oh, speaking of the 80s, beautiful, beautiful feathered hair.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Beautiful 80s score.
Oh,
God. The score in this movie was amazing.
Yeah, that's another thing that reminded me of Chips, you know? Just something from a... Like I could see scenes where they would just, like, cut and it would... It's like they were making this movie knowing that it would be on, like, the local UPN station on a Saturday afternoon, you know? Because they would have some stuff that would be so tame, and then they show them shooting somebody and all these bad, bad blood packets coming out,
like,
you know?
Red paint blood packets. Oh, like, God. The very beginning of the movie. But speaking of people getting shot, did anybody else laugh when that ninja gets shot climbing down the building by Lee Van Cleef's men? He's, like, climbing down the building. They take a shot and just falls. And he's like, I told you to shoot them when they get on the ground. I was like, oh, they're going to go over there. They're not going to find the body. And they're like, nope, they're still there.
What was his point? What was his Lee Van Cleef's character? What was
he was, like, he was, like, the leader of, like, a Blackwater. Like, that's why they want, like, Chuck Norris to be part of their team so they can go fight other terrorists.
Oh, man.
So basically he's like, I'm going to build an army of guys with guns. You build an army of guys with swords. And we'll meet in the middle somewhere. We'll have a fight.
Yeah.
And then Chuck Norris was like, I'm not interested in that. But you know what? I will have to say I was kind of impressed with Chuck Norris's fighting scenes, like where he's in the warehouse with the rest of the mercenaries. Because like, you actually see him like do some pretty cool like, you know, aerial type tornado kicks and stuff like that. Which I was like, all right, that's kind of what I was hoping for.
I disagree. I thought the fighting choreography in this movie was pretty terrible. Yeah. I mean, especially one of the climactic final fights. I think I saw no less than 4 to 5. Judo flips in a row.
Yep.
Like, somebody got judo flipped, he'd get up, he'd judo flip the other guy, and then it just kept going like that, and I'm like, do you guys know any other moves? And you're just gonna keep doing this all day?
It's just so crazy how, you know, he's surrounded by 5 guys, and they attack him one at a time. One at a time.
They don't attack him at all. I was like, oh, because, like, he runs in that room, and he's fighting, you know, Sakura, and then they just kind of, like, have their swords, and they just kind of stand there, like, well, what do we do? Like, we're the class before, this sucky class. And, oh, how about the scene where the dude falls on the floor? He's like, step forward. And then he hears him screaming from the trap door, let me out of here, you son of a bitch!
I just couldn't believe that this movie was acceptable in any era. Like, I was just like, this is
it got
so bad.
Critically, it was actually really well reviewed.
Really?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You actually looked it up?
I looked it up.
I didn't even think it was...
It was actually favorably received.
On what?
On Wikipedia.
Oh, Wikipedia. Oh, Wikipedia. You can't trust Wikipedia.
Maybe for the time... I mean, there were a lot of movies of this style. Like, Gymkhana was like a lot like this movie.
Don't say a bad word about Gymkhana.
American Ninja. Remember those movies? Like, I think they're around the same level of movie. Like, they just... I don't know. Like, in the scenes where Chuck Norris picks up the women, I'm like, how can any woman ever go for this guy? He looks like... he's gonna kill you. Like, he just looks like the type of guy with his little porn stash. Like, he's just gonna fucking murder you, like, as soon as he gets you inside his house. Like,
you're not going anywhere now.
His acting was so robotic.
Well, you know, probably after this, he went skydiving without a parachute. And then he said he would apologize. The world only needs one Grand Canyon.
I don't know. Like, I had fun, but...
Yeah, that's one thing. I was never bored throughout this movie. It's just that, you know, I found times to laugh a lot.
Yeah.
That's when you want to invite your friends over with, like, some drinks and, like, some pizza and have a good time just kind of joking around with it. And I wonder if there's a riff tracks for this. There's gotta be.
This is one of those movies that watching it as a 36-year-old man, pure comedy. Watching it as a, like, 11-year-old kid, the greatest action movie ever made. Like,
I can see that.
It's just that type of movie. Like, it's weird. Like, when you grow up, you just see what you used to like. And I used to like movies like this. I remember loving American Ninja, the first one. Holy crap, I was fucking floored by that movie. And I bet if I went to go see it now, I'd be like, holy crap, I was an idiot.
What was I thinking?
Okay, kids, the only thing on Wikipedia says The Octagon is considered to be a cult favorite for martial arts film fans of the late 80s. Of the 80s. A large number of ninja films soon followed, most notably the Sho Kasugi films.
That's right.
The Ninja Sense movie was so bad. They weren't even Japanese. They were like American. Like, yeah. Guys that had too much time on their hands, like military type guys. And I'm like, the ninjas was so bad. Like, it wasn't even...
Oh, and what about the Octagon itself? Did they ever make mention of the Octagon?
You see it at the beginning of the movie when you're coming to the ninja training camp. There's an Octagon right there.
Yeah, but also the shape of that wooden structure was the shape of an Octagon at the end. So, but I mean, did they ever make any mention of, like...
It is never said once.
Like, why does it call the Octagon?
I was paying attention to see if they would say it, because I wanted to point out and go, that's the name of the movie. Because I love doing that.
This movie does not give you much in it. And as far as plot, like, I mean, they kind of tell you stuff like, hey, Chuck Norris is like some kind of karate champion or something.
He's a ninja master.
And he's obviously well known because people recognize him and stuff like that. Like, the women's like, oh, I was hoping you'd come over and ask me out. And they talk about him being a karate champion or something. And then they give you a little flashback of him as a youth. And he's like, I guess, trained by the same guy that trained the other guy.
His Sakura. Father, his half brother, and he were trained by their father, who is the ninja master.
Wait, Chuck Norris is the son of that guy?
That's his brother. That's his half-brother, Sakura.
What?
Yeah.
I totally didn't get that.
I didn't get that either. I have no idea. I thought he was just like Jean-Claude in
Bloodsport.
Yeah,
After he steals the sword, he's like, you forget that. You never look for your brother ever again. He is now your mortal enemy.
When Batman is in trouble, he turns on the Chuck Norris signal.
I don't even know what else to say about this movie.
Chuck Norris never eats a hot dinner because revenge is always a dish served cold.
I feel like we should just keep telling Chuck Norris
jokes.
Chuck Norris can play a Blu-ray disc on a tape recorder. Chuck Norris can inflate a balloon by inhaling.
Chuck Norris can believe it's not butter.
In the third grade, Chuck Norris turned in a test with only his name on it and got a college scholarship.
All right, so he's talking to that first girl, the one that where I thought the people turned into ninjas. He's like, oh, I want to know how you incorporated the martial arts into your routine. You never see her routine. She's taking a bow when she first appears.
Yeah.
She's like, yay. And then he's like, I want to talk to you about... I'm like, I wish I could have seen this dance routine. It would have been great.
Why did you want to see that?
Because it would have made more sense to have that, like...
Oh, that would have made more sense.
There's a lot of stuff in this movie that doesn't make sense. I had no idea why his friend was becoming, like,
a super sleuth.
Like a sleuth, a detective. Like, why he was trying to track anybody down.
You know what it felt like? It felt like this was the sequel to something, or like a follow-up to a TV series.
Yeah, like, you should already know who these characters are, sort of. I totally agree with that, because I was like, should I know who Chuck Norris is and what he does already?
You know, and then, you know, he has these internal whispers, a dialogue with himself. And he obviously has almost like this sixth sense, you know? And then you see his former friend, former brother, you know, have the same sense of it, where he just says, they're coming, you know? And then they get ready.
Those inner dialogue scenes, every time they happened, I laughed. It was hilarious. Because not only was it just badly executed, it was poorly written. Like, a lot of the stuff he was saying is like, it was just like, I can't even remember. It was like, no, there is another.
There is.
And then it just cut to his brother doing whatever, training these guys. And you never even see him physically training anyone.
No.
It's just these guys and they're like learning how to choke each other out with ropes.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like, this practicing. Is what ninja training is.
And so then, the guy who wrote this screenplay, his name is Lee Chapman. He also wrote for the Wild Wild West TV series and one episode of Mission Impossible.
That explains why it looks like the way it does.
The Mod Squad. I mean, no.
Well, other... it explains the overall look and feel of the movie. Maybe he was trying to use it as a pitch for a TV series.
I want
to
know what the editor has done, because I thought the editing in this movie was fucking terrible. Like, yeah. It was really bad. Like, there was... I mean, maybe it's because of what he had to work with, because the acting and the scenes were so poorly constructed and the writing was bad. But I just felt like certain scenes just felt like they were really in a rush to move on. And then other scenes just kind of dragged, where you felt like, why are we here? Why are we doing this for so long? Like, I don't get it.
Well, what kills me too is that scene where Chuck Norris comes into his apartment and Aura is waiting for him. And she has an Uzi. And then she just gives up. She's like, well, I don't even know why I have this, so you probably just take it away from me anyway. I'm like, what, is he Magneto? You have like a good... He takes what I mean. You have a submachine gun. You can cut him in half from this distance.
I just felt like everything was very like... I can't believe this whole thing just kind of fell into his lap. The way he just randomly meets this girl, and then he randomly is driving one day and drives by this woman. I'm like, dude, within a day and a half...
was a setup.
I guess it was a setup, but how did she know where he was going to be?
Because Lee Van Cleef knows where he lives. They're friends. And that whole setup...
Van Cleef set that up with that woman?
Yeah, he's still trying to recruit Chuck Norris at that point in the movie. And so she asks him for a ride, takes his keys, so he walks to her house to get her keys back, and then while they're driving, remember, they're followed by a limousine and a red Thunderbird?
Yeah.
And both of those cars belong to Lee Van Cleef. He's basically trying to, like, get, like, come on, you know, I want you on my team. Like, you
could do stuff like this. I understand it was a setup. I didn't know he was behind it. I thought the woman was behind it.
Speaking about that chase, I've seen better chase scenes in Chips and Dukes of Hazzard.
So I was hoping for
a big crash or something?
A fun 70s chase, you know, like under camera. Whoa!
It was terrible. You could really tell they didn't want to ruin those cars.
Yeah, they're like, we got to be real careful. It's like,
fucking Burt Reynolds.
No.
And Sally Field. God damn it. What the fuck? You know, with Sally Field and Burt Reynolds driving across. No, not Cannonball Run.
Smokey and the Bandit?
Smokey and the Bandit. Thank you. Jesus, that movie's great. The editor, Dan Kahn. He actually died last year. Bunch of TV. I mean, nothing but TV.
Again, that explains the look and feel of it.
The Loretta Young Show. The Jimmy Durante Show, My Favorite Husband.
This all.
I Love Lucy. I mean, nothing but TV.
Yeah, this all points to why it looks the way it does.
Yeah,
I mean, these two have two guys who are heavily involved in TV. Make it look. I have a feeling that this probably was initially a pitch for a TV series, much like the movie Zombieland was supposed to be a pitch for a TV series as well. Now it's on Amazon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that movie's supposed to be the first two episodes of Zombieland.
Mm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, this is like, you know, like, we have this movie called The Octagon, but we want to make a series building up to this movie.
So the cinematographer, Michael Hugo, TV. Bunch of TV. Mission Impossible, again. So it looks like a lot of people who knew each other just worked on this movie.
Just the way the movie looked, too. Everything was, like, wide-angle shots.
The
streets of
San Francisco.
I love the stock explosion sound effects for everything that exploded. And the long flame trail to the burning truck. Well, you're like, wow, I could just run and just put this out. Like, if I was an engineer, like, I'm just going to put my foot there and, like, get the sand away with all the gases. I'm like, oh, let's look. I'll have this explode. But nope.
Chuck Norris hit a home run while playing for the Dallas Cowboys.
Do we really need spoilers for this movie?
I mean,
we haven't given any away yet. Told you, see? Don't necessarily need to give away spoilers to do a review.
Just for shits and giggles, let's go right into spoilers.
Okay, then I'll spoil how the second girlfriend dies. Poison dart in the neck. just walking out of a date after seeing Chuck Norris and Aura in the same room. She's like, I'm so unhappy with this. And she starts walking, and there's a dude in a car with a blowgun. Oh! She goes down. Like, all right, you know, that's actually kind of creative. You don't see blowgun deaths very often in movies.
I guess. I mean, you know, honestly, the scene that encapsulates what this movie is the very final scene.
Oh, yeah.
He literally kills this guy, stands there for a second, movie ends, credits.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, there, holy shit, these guys are
wearing a hurt. Right on the sun.
Silhouetted by the sun rose.
I was just like, man, they really must have either been on a tight schedule, or this guy had nothing like else. Like, there was no, like, final, like, cliche final scene where he hugs, like, a woman or something, or is reunited with, like, his friend ends up dying. He doesn't even save him. He gets his throat cut. Like, I don't know. This movie goes off the wall. Like, I usually would appreciate stuff like this. Like, he's going there to save his friend who's been taken hostage.
AJ, I've got to
save
you.
This guy cannot protect anyone. Everyone that's around him dies.
This is what made him the Chuck Norris that he is today.
By losing everybody? He's like Batman?
He's like, I can't. I will not ever lose again.
During a power outage, Chuck Norris kickstarted the generators at the Hoover Dam.
I'm willing to bet that also, too. Maybe, like, you know, Tadashi Yamashita might have only had, like, we only can shoot you for, like, a couple hours, because, like, even, like, his, like, dialogue doesn't really make sense. He's like, why did you choose those weapons? Are you afraid of them? Like, oh, so you picked a pair of Kama, and you're going to go up against this guy with a sword? Are you serious?
The dinosaurs once owed Chuck Norris money. They never paid him back.
Chuck Norris's tears can cure cancer if he cried.
I don't even know what else to say about the movie, to be honest. I'm searching. I'm really searching for something to talk about.
You
about
said you
movie.
Fell asleep during a certain part?
I did fall asleep for about, I think, 10 minutes, because I had no idea how he got from the city, I guess, to how he tracked down these people.
He runs. He, like, you see him running through the woods, like, in showing up at the place all in black. You see him, like, getting dressed. Like,
so
it's, like,
it was close by.
I think they just cut out, like, him traveling via plane or...
So basically, whatever. What you're supposed to infer is he ran across the ocean, if it's overseas.
I don't think it's overseas. I really think it was, like, South America.
So he ran across the... the Grand Canal?
Yeah, he's like, he's Chuck Norris, he runs across water.
I don't know. It's typical 80s movies. Like, I didn't know what I was expecting. I think I pretty much expected what this movie was, but this movie even surprised me in how bad it was.
Well, like, were you surprised by the gratuitous booby shot?
I actually cheered that on. I actually cheered that on. I was like, yeah, boobies! Here we go!
Once again, another part that you will easily just cut out for the TV.
It's like, oh, if you saw the movie, you got to see nip, you got to see side boob.
Now, what was this movie rated?
R?
Well, this is before the rating.
No. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, I think it's retroactively.
Retroactively, R. I would say R, because, I mean, you do see people get killed. But not for language. Definitely not for language.
It's probably a PG-13, because you only see, like, side boob. You see some blood at the beginning of the movie, and then that's it.
The movie was mostly bloodless.
That's rated R.
It was mostly bloodless, though, after that. Like, even at the end, right?
I guess
guys get hit with Chinese stars, but you don't see, like...
Yeah. And he's like, ah! And then you... Oh, I'm so mad at you, I'm gonna kick him into this fire!
I love how the ninjas are just coming out of nowhere, like, under buildings and from the top
that
of trees.
That was so cool! I like that. Because, like, they actually were hidden. Like, they're walking by, and people are like, oh, and you just just tumble out of nowhere.
You just reminded me of the best.
The scene where the body?
No, the scene where Chuck Norris is hiding in the tree.
Oh, and no one sees
him. He's barely up in that tree. His feet are literally hanging over. And these two guys are just like, I heard something.
And he's not even wearing, like, camouflage or anything.
Oh, that's the other scene. The ninjas in the beginning of the movie, they're wearing black, and it's middle of the day. And they're in trees. How does nobody see these people? These aren't, like... lush trees. These are, like, literally branches. And they're wearing black, and I'm like, how does nobody see there's ninjas in that tree right there?
10 feet from the ground.
Seriously. I was like, come on, man.
And then the other thing, too, is, like, with ninjas, this predates closed-circuit television, you know, like, being fairly commonplace in, like, buildings. Why not, if you were a ninja trying to kill somebody, why don't you take the elevator? Like, why are you going to scale the outside of a building? Where if anybody's like, oh, whoa, it looks like rain, what the hell is that? Like, are those ninjas?
An autograph from Chuck Norris is a roundhouse kick to the head.
This movie it made me a little sad that this quality level was acceptable at some point, that that somebody could put this out, and I don't know that it got a theatrical release. I really would be surprised if it did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No,
it got a theatrical release.
Holy crap, man. Like,
it grossed $18 million.
On a budget of?
I don't know.
$20? I don't know. Like, I couldn't imagine that this movie was... Like you said, it was well received.
I don't know about that.
I can't imagine it, man. Like I mean, unless like every other movie was of this level of quality. Like I can't remember what this movie's what 1980.
80.
What the hell came out in 1980? Like Star Wars came out what like a year
77.
Before
79.
Yeah,
77, 79. Yeah. Empire Strikes Back wasn't that far behind. Wasn't that
no,
far?
No, 77, 81, 84.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like Indiana Jones was just about to come out, right? Back to the Future came out in what, like 85? Like,
this yeah, but these aren't ninja movies.
But still, I mean, they didn't really. I don't know that this
movie. The Shining came out in 1980.
This movie did not.
Oh, sell you're ninjas. Right. Star Wars: Empire Strikes Back came out in 1980. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Like, Airplane, Blues Brothers, Caddyshack.
Again, not ninja movies. Still, you know, all good but movies to be sure.
They said that this movie.
Okay, here we go. Not action Flash movies. Gordon.
I rest my case.
This movie does not make me want to, like, if I was a studio exec seeing this, I would not be like, we should make a ninja movie. Those guys are badass. Like, the ninjas in this movie were terrible. Like, they were not cool at all. Like,
I remember there's a bunch of movie extras that Chuck Norris probably trained. And you're like, here's what you do. Here's how
and
you.
And even that older, like, teacher guy, he gets taken out easily by, like, one of the guys that's not even fully trained yet.
Yeah.
And I'm just like...
These are ninjas? Exactly.
This is the guy that's training the guys that are supposed to be badass. Like, he just got taken out easily. Like, I don't know.
I'm not seeing anything else that was, like, could be considered a ninja movie. Oh, I'm seeing lots of movies of note, but Shogun Assassin?
There you go.
A great, yeah, samurai movie from 1980. I don't know. It's 7.3 on IMDb.
Yeah, that's actually it's kind of like a classic, like
put it this way, movie. To this day, American like ninja movies will never be able to hold a candle to the Shaw Brothers. It's never going to happen.
Have you seen Ninja Assassin?
I did see Ninja Assassin.
What did you think?
It was interesting.
You didn't really think it was a ninja movie.
It was a ninja movie, only the fact that the ninjas are the noisiest ninjas I've ever seen. They're constantly talking to each other, like, we should kill this guy, he's the traitor.
Oh, they're constantly whispering.
They're constantly whispering. Voices. I'm like, if I myself was a ninja, I'm like, I hear you.
Do you think that's a throwback to this movie?
I wouldn't surprise me. Imagine if it was. You go back and research it later, like, oh, wow.
I appreciate Ninja Assassin for what they tried to do, like make a darker, grittier ninja movie.
Christ almighty.
But, yeah, I do see that it has problems, but I liked it. I mean, I like that they didn't hold back with people being hurt. And
you had that fucking poster on your desktop for the longest time.
Dude, I actually own it on Blu-ray. Like, I'm a fan of that movie. I know I probably shouldn't be, but every time I watch it, I'm like, you know what? I'm glad that this movie was able to be made.
It's like the movie that I'm not sure if it was made in America, but I remember it came out shortly after Ninja Assassin was The Warrior's Way.
That movie was not very good.
That movie reminded me of an old you know, kung fu movie.
Yeah,
especially when he's at the beginning, and he has like all those dudes that come out of the wine, just runs past them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just see him like blur, and then like he's like the number one swordsman in Japan, yeah. And he gets cut down, and like the guys and, like, appears over the guys like number one swordsman in Japan.
Like, yeah, I felt like a video game sometimes. Like, I was just like.
But this is not the octagon we're talking about. Let's talk about Chuck Norris.
If the mountain won't come to Muhammad, Chuck Norris will bring it.
So shall we give grades?
I guess so, Wally.
I'm going to give it a B.
Wow.
It's because I'm comparing it to like what it was like at the time for like these kind of movies, like early 80s action movies. There wasn't a hell of a lot of like, it was not like it is like it is today where like you have something like Crank and...
Well, wait a minute. I mean... are you trying to compare it to other ninja movies or just action movies?
Action movies of the time.
Of the time? Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back.
Sci-fi, not action.
Definite amounts of action in there. Superman 2.
Hero movie, not an action movie. Oh,
God. I'm going through this list.
I mean, how much longer after this did Braddock, like the Missing in Action series, come out?
Braddock? I don't know. I'm not going to look it up either.
Always doing grades, right? Like a C minus.
Yeah, I would give it a C because, you know, like I said, there were parts of it I wasn't really bored with it, and I did. I was entertained to a degree, you know. So I'd have to give it a C. So A B, a C, and a C plus average, I guess?
We'll give it a C average.
A C average? All right.
I mean, cause it's not the greatest movie. I mean, I'm kind of skewing the curve with, with other, trying to compare it to other movies of that time of the same genre.
Well, not many of the same genre at that time, I don't think.
Because there have been, like, things like Clint Eastwood movies, where just, like, him, like, shooting every few
minutes. A Dirty Harry movie, you mean?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't, like, a lot of, like, heavy, like, you know, a lot of, like, you know, insane old fighting action. It was just, like, you know, a couple of punches, haymakers, and then, you know, Clint Eastwood goes for his gun. You know, and then, you know, takes a guy out. So this is the first time watchers.
Chuck Norris knows a word that rhymes with orange.
And purple. And silver.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. And if you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be discussing Michael Bay's most recent film, Pain and Gain.
I'm certainly curious about this.
I predict pain.
Oh!
Cocaine does Chuck Norris.
That's a First Time Watchers podcast because we like to watch.
Uh-oh.
You'll see why. I have a perfectly good and logical, insane explanation for all of this.
I really don't understand why we sound so low. It's weird.
That I don't know. Is the volume on this all the way up? Do we have enough gain?
It's on this side.
Yeah, it hasn't been touched.
How about this volume? Does that volume need to go up?
Well, it's just my my headphone volume.
Is everything plugged in correctly? You have the...
Fiddlin' Tech, this week on the First Time Watchers podcast.
Yeah, like... Just talk directly into the microphone?
Talking directly into the microphone.
We need to cut a promo for Three Black Geeks.
You sent you that link.
All right. Now just talk like normal volume, not excited.
Boy, I love oatmeal. It's just so exciting.
Oatmeal.
The quick brown fox jumps over the fence. My jackdaw is a big sphinx of quartz.
Brown dog.
I sell seashells by the seashore.
My jackdaw's a big sphinx of quartz.
You're jacking off what?
My jackdaw's a big sphinx of quartz. It's a sentence you can use every single letter of the alphabet in.
I think we sound a little bit low, but it sounds a little...
Well, let's just get excited!
It just sounds a little kind of echoey.
Weird. Maybe because there's a lack of children outside bouncing sound off of them.
I can hear the birds outside, but they usually don't get picked up too much by the... when it goes to the podcast, but like... I don't know.
I noticed that Tim drove an ice cream truck here today, and there's strangely no children playing outside. I wonder if that has anything to do with this.